like, this is it, you know, we're in our middle age now. We can't wait for things to calm down or get better.
This is On a Mission, episode 22. This is a space where I get real and go deep with my guests. They're all folks who are living out their callings, paying close attention to their lives, and each doing so with special flair. I'm your host, Maureen Dupree-Dominguez. I'm a minister, teacher, writer, and general people enthusiast, and I can't wait to share some of these thought-provoking people with you, folks who are ready to get real and go deep. Well, I did something different this week. See, I reached out to my old friend, Maureen Dunn Fetcher, to talk about her business, Mata Traders. We were best pals in middle school and then went our separate ways for a long time. We've been in very loose touch. We circle back about every 10 years, and this is our 10-year circle back. Maureen went on from middle school to become this impressive fair trade entrepreneur. She established her company, Mata Traders, almost 14 years ago in Chicago. The company has partnerships with women's cooperatives in India and Nepal and sells their clothing and jewelry and other artisan products here in the United States. It's such a cool story. She spent her 20s and 30s building this business, which is thriving and doing so much good in the world. And now she has evolved into the role of managing partner and has hired a new managing director to run the day-to-day operations of the business. So hers is actually a story of what happens after you've worked your tail off in your 20s and 30s and are ready to evolve. Also, P.S., she now has 3 kids, an 8-year-old and twin 15-month-olds. And Maureen reached back to me to suggest that we have a different kind of podcast. Instead of me just interviewing her, she wanted to record our conversation. That is a back and forth of me asking her questions, but also her asking me questions. So that's what we did. What you're about to hear is really an unscripted conversation between two women who were middle school friends about 30 years ago, catching up on work, motherhood, and spirituality. I hope you enjoy listening. It's so great to talk to you.
I know that we're on a podcast, but I can see you and you look beautiful. I want to say, after not seeing you for 10 years, but also just knowing you when we were like 11 really well, you haven't changed. It's funny.
I would say same. Isn't that funny?
That is weird. 'Cause sometimes people really look different.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know what that means, but I'm glad that I don't look that different than when I was 11.
You look cool. You look great.
Thanks.
Because we're both in our kind of lit. What are we? 40s.
I'm gonna say mid. I'm gonna claim it mid. 40s.
God, gosh darn it. Yeah.
Yeah. And you are at home. Are at home now, but I also really wanted my listeners to hear about your experience, like after college, going to India, and then establishing really what became this enormous company.
Sure, I love telling that story.
Great. Tell us about when you went to India.
Yeah, well, I was actually like 24, 25, and I went on a round the world trip. With two of my best friends from college. They're just like my soul sisters. Like, you know, we were attached at the hip through college. We went to Australia and worked after college. We did our own stuff for a few years, and then we saved our money and went on a round the world trip. And right about then, I feel like all of our parents were kind of like, all right, girls, what you doing with your life now? Let's get, what's your professional direction? Because really in my 20s, I just like worked to travel mostly. That's mm-hmm. what I really loved doing. And I always felt like it gave, I feel like I learned so much traveling as a piece of my education.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, we went on a, like a 10-month trip, and we spent a lot of time in India. We spent probably 4 months there. And have you ever been there?
Nope.
No. It's an amazing place. Talk about like God is alive there. God is alive in everything. Yeah. And everything is God. And there's, I just like love that about India. It's just like with all the different representations of God and all the, you know, it's just a really cool place to experience a religion that's so active in everybody's lifestyles. So yeah, we spent like 4 months in India and traveled around a lot there over land. And then I just kind of became obsessed with all the beautiful textiles and crafts, and just they have, every state has such a rich tradition of, you know, crafts and beautiful things, especially fabrics. So then I started importing, like I got back and started importing, and I went back on my own trips a couple times by myself for 2 or 3 months and traveled around and bought things and sold things out of my van and did festivals. And eventually, after I think the second time I went, I started to really think about where the products that I was buying in the marketplace were coming from.
Mm.
Really wondering about that. And so, and at the same time, I had kind of learned about what fair trade was, because sometimes people ask me if my products were fair trade and if I had bought them directly from artisans. And sometimes I had, but sometimes I was just dealing with small batch wholesalers or, you know, markets. And so once I learned about what fair trade was, I thought, I've got to go back there and work with organizations that have transparency, that are helping, you know, empower women and doing really cool training programs and education. And so that was pretty easy to do, because I just Googled it and looked in my Lonely Planet and found some really great organizations. I traveled around and I developed partnerships with the ones that I felt had really good products and could communicate well, and started building a more, you know, just a fair trade line. And I really stuck with clothing and jewelry mm-hmm. rather than I was, you know, had pretty much everything for a while. So that's sort of where Mata Traders began. And Mata means mother in Hindi. And so I just felt like Mother India and this idea of female Shakti power and me sort of carving my own path and creating a business. And then Joni and Michelle joined in with me. A year or two after I started, and we each took on a piece of the business and started wholesaling. And then that was like 14 years ago or something. Yeah. So yeah. And we have, we're based in Chicago. We recently did a pretty phenomenal thing, which was we hired a managing director and we kind of replaced ourselves within yeah. the organization
mm-hmm.
With some really, really good, our managing director is amazing. And we have a new sales director. And so we did that once and we made some mistakes in the hire that we had, just the fit. And so then we tried it again a couple of years later because we've kind of felt like it was, We felt like we had gotten it sort of to a certain place, and we really needed people with professional skill sets. And we were, you know, been doing it for a long time.
Right.
And this idea of, you know, exploring different things in your life and evolving and having, you know, we just did it in the last year, but it's been a really interesting process to kind of be outside of the business now. And the team is awesome. The products look so good. I mean, everything is just beautiful. And it's just like an exciting, invigorating time. And I also have, you know, these, I have two twin babies that are like 15 months. So that was another big thing where I really needed to step away and be at home.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
So I'm still involved and I still meet with our, I'm like the managing partner. So I still meet with Catherine and I'm involved with the strategy and supporting her,
okay.
But really stepped outside of the day to day, which is amazing.
It really is. And
yeah.
You birthed this company and then, and you tended to it for 14 years and then you handed it to someone else and it's like still going.
Yeah. It's like it went to college. And it was my baby before I had a baby. And I mean, it's not a business that you want to say, oh, I'm finished with it, because we employ artisans in India and Nepal, and we've had relationships for 12 years, you know? So it's like, we want to keep the business going. It's a beautiful business. And can we perhaps even grow it more if we let it go to college?
Yeah.
And, you know, founders, I feel really proud of us. It's been hard and we've made mistakes. But we built a profitable business together, and it's a hard thing for founders to know when to say, okay, I think I'm going to step away and I'm going to let this, kind of evolve on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great.
That's awesome.
Feels good. Feels real good.
Congratulations. That's an enormous, enormous accomplishment.
Thanks. And I can, like, I don't know, you know, I'm sure any listeners that have businesses understand this, or even just a pretty high pressure job, but you know, it's hard to compartmentalize things when it's your business. And it always felt like it was taking up so much of my mental space.
Mm.
I loved it. It was like breathing. But I feel like I have a new lease on life right now, because I get to be more present with my kids, and I don't feel some of that constant responsibility and weight of managing people, and mm-hmm. which, you know, was great. But it's just a big responsibility.
Totally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what's going on with that.
So good. tell me about becoming a mother at age 35.
Okay. And then you can tell me about becoming a mother at what time? When did you become a mother?
37.
Probably similar experience. Well, you know, it was hard doing both the business and having Nevin, you know, and when I think about that now, I feel really lucky that with these girls, I have more time. Yeah. Because, you know, I had a lot of flexibility, so I didn't have to be at work all the time. I could be home, but my work was never done. I was always on my phone, checking my emails, or I don't even know if I was on my phone. When was that? I could do that then. Probably. Yes. So yeah, I think that was hard. Like, I always kind of felt like, I sucked at both of the things, you know, like I wasn't able to really spend the time I needed with the business. And I wasn't also sometimes able to, you know, always be the mom that I wanted to be, or have enough time. And, so that was hard. And mm-hmm. I always like to be really real about that, because it's hard, you know, doing it. There's no really doing it all. It's like something has to suffer.
Yep.
Or multiple things do. What about you? How was it? Did you just take a maternity leave and get back to things, or?
Nope. So I was teaching high school full time. And at mm-hmm. that time I had a very demanding job, because I wasn't just teaching. I was also doing campus ministry, and I was doing retreats, and I was doing everything related to like the religious life of the school. And it took us much longer than we had anticipated to become pregnant. And so finally we did. And anyway, so then once we did, I was like, oh, you know, I was ready to let go of work, and I was ready to try to focus more on the baby. And then I was offered an opportunity, which was amazing, when she was born. So I left my old school, and this new school came to me and said, we'll give you 2 online classes, like purely online, to teach while you like have the baby and whatever, like get your feet under you or whatever as a mom. And then, you know, and then we'll see where it goes from there. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So that was like incredible. I mean, I would have been able to go back to my old job if I'd wanted to, of course. But then this opportunity came where, I don't know about you, but I just found that like my whole world turned upside down when Sophia was born, and I could not wrap my mind around childcare, nannies, daycare, whatever. I just couldn't think about it. And then I didn't have to. I know that lots of women have to, and so they just do, and you just do it. But because I had this opportunity to work from home and teach these online classes, I took that. And so, and actually I didn't start teaching those online classes until she was 6 months old. So I had 6 months basically with no work obligations, just going crazy with trying to figure out how to take care of a baby.
Well, and that's the thing is like, I mean, those first few months, yeah, it's hard. And it depends, like with the twins too, I had postpartum depression and anxiety. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Like I thought with Nevin, I got a little of it. I could tell, but it was manageable. And then it goes away, mm-hmm. you know, like at night, when the night would come, I'd be like, dun, 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 you know, like everything was a little scary.
Yeah.
But then with the girls, I mean, it was insane. Like I got it. And I think that also when you're in your 40s, a couple of my friends said that they had it in their 40s too. Like your hormones are already changing anyways. And so I was crippled with that. I mean, it was slow, but it was like, I would have a couple of good days and then a bad day. And it was like every decision got real scary.
Yeah.
Like, and that is anxiety. Like I've always had low grade anxiety. But it was like other next level.
Yeah.
Like I felt kind of paralyzed. And so I was really fortunate to, we had a postpartum doula that was helping me, and she knew so much about it. And she was just like, girl, you got to go see somebody. Like, I can tell you're having it.
Yeah.
And I did, and I got some antidepressants, which I had never been on. Mm-hmm. And it completely saved my life.
Yeah.
And I am so grateful that I did it like month 3, as opposed to a lot of women that I had talked to waited, you know, you wait 6-8 months, there you go. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You just wait.
That was me.
And it gets worse.
Absolutely.
Because the anxiety turns into depression.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So see, this is an experience that women should talk about, because it is real. And some women don't get it at all. Like, it just depends.
I know. I don't know much about younger people. I don't have very many friends or close friends who got pregnant early on, or who had babies like in their early 20s. So I don't have a lot of people to compare it to, but I really feel like my postpartum anxiety and depression really hit a peak around like 12 months.
I've heard that.
Yeah. Like I still remember on her first birthday, I was not okay.
Mm-hmm.
I still remember feeling just so much anxiety. I mean, I was paranoid about her sleep and my sleep, and I would convince
Sleep. Yes.
I would convince myself that she would never sleep right, and that I would never sleep again. And that for me was just really, really bad. So yeah, that's
terrifying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because, and that's the thing about postpartum is that, you know, it's unlike any other kind of depression and anxiety, because it's not like you can take care of yourself. It's not like you can, you know, get more sleep if you have to, or, you know, do mindfulness things. Oh, I mean, yeah. You don't have time for any of that. So it's like, how do you actually, and then when you have anxiety, you can't sleep, and then if you can't sleep, you get anxiety.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. That's right. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. That was very, very, very difficult for me. And I do attribute it somewhat to being older, or like, you know, on my way to 40. But I don't know. Looking back, I would have gotten a lot more help a lot sooner in every aspect. I mean, mm-hmm. mental health help for sure, but also just physical help with the baby. And,
cause you didn't have family close by either. Yeah. Right. This right. is the thing. I mean, yeah. Not to have like a bunch of women around you to help, that can slowly put you into a postpartum depression, anxiety too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not how it was meant to be.
No, it's not how it was meant to be. So mm-hmm. yeah. And I almost got to see it two ways. Cause then I got on my medication and it was safe with breastfeeding. They had done studies on it. So that was good. And I went to this amazing postpartum guy or a psychiatrist who really understood, you know, postpartum. And so I got to see it both ways, because then the medicine started working and I was like, wait, everything is okay.
Yeah.
Like everything's okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to be able to do this. Cause I was thinking to myself, I'm not going to be able to do this. Like, I don't know how I'm going to have three kids like this.
Right.
How can I remember what Nevin's going to need and what they're going to do? And just going through that transformation and healing, and then being like, I can do this. It's okay. Like everything's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am so grateful for the right people and just getting the help I needed and not being ashamed about it. And it was a gift so that I could, you know, heal and enjoy what's going on right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that is really amazing to hear. Cause yeah, no, it was a very, very long time until I could really appreciate that. Yeah, everything's okay.
Yeah. And you know, I was listening to a podcast. I really like Goop podcasts.
Uh-huh.
They're good. And it was about perimenopausal anxiety and depression.
Brother.
I know. And that women that have had postpartum are more inclined to get it. And it's, oh, actually, no, I think I was listening to it on NPR. And it basically, like, all these women in their mid to late 40s are having a mental health crisis. And they're like, what's wrong? Why am I so depressed?
Mm.
And their doctors aren't even pointing them in the right direction to say, like, listen, you could get some hormonal therapy, or you could talk to a psychiatrist, or you could, because there's some real changes that go on too. So it's good to be aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you know, if that's happening to you, when all of a sudden you're having that change and you're feeling a different way. And again, some women don't get it at all and some do.
Right. So, right.
It's like, gosh, being a woman. And then once a month too, you're just,
I know it. No, it's so true. And really, like what you're saying is too, that the systems obviously still have so far to go in terms of catching up with how to serve women, like the medical
exactly.
system, the employment system, the parental leave system, like all the systems have so far to go to catch up to mm-hmm. be really addressing women's realities.
Yeah. And now what is this, the pandemic impact on women? I think New York Times just had an article, I haven't read it yet, just about the real impact for women mentally and with their jobs. And
yep. I've seen several pieces. Yeah. In the New York mm-hmm. Times about how the pandemic is especially impacting women. Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in so many ways, it's just the same old story, isn't it? Of like women taking on the burdens of the whole world and then not receiving the support that they need in order to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's exactly what it is. It's, and then that's where you think about your boundaries and having, good self-care, good self-compassion. And I think those are, and that's what I kind of wanted to talk with you about too. It's like, just like, what have you learned, or where are you at in your 40s? Because for me, I feel like in the past probably 4 years, I've really taken a journey. I don't know what I would call it, but a mindfulness journey. Like, there's certain books that I've been reading, and maybe a spiritual journey or an evolution journey, but just all of these things that you realize in your 40s, about how, like, this is it, you know, we're in our middle age now, and we can't wait for things to calm down or get better. Like that's one thing. Do you read Pema Chodron?
Yeah.
Do you know her?
Yeah.
I love how she just says, you know, life is just things fall apart and they come back together, and they fall apart and they come back together. You know, you are always there, and the waves are crashing on you, and the waves don't get any smaller. It's like, you just work on being able to tolerate the changes and know that it's always going to change. And how do you do that? You have to take care of yourself, and you have to love yourself, and all those sorts of self-helpy things.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
And have you had any, or no, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I also feel like, it's like, yes, take care of yourself. Yes. Love yourself. And also know that you will survive, right? Like that, like,
yeah,
when these things come crashing down on us, or when things fall apart. And after that has happened a couple of times, which I must say for me in my life, and especially compared to a lot of the stories of people I know, things have not fallen apart that often or that severely, but that as you go through it a couple of times, you know, you're going to survive it. You know, you're going to make it. And that to me is really key.
Yeah. It's like an idea of like resilience in a way. My son, we've been working on that concept with him, is like resilience around when things are hard, or he doesn't want to do something, or, you know, and I think we all have to do that. It's, and when you've lived your life and had those experiences, yeah, you know, just let go, accept, let go, accept, let go, accept.
Totally. And I think that's part of why, you know, I've been walking through this pandemic with my teenage students. And for so many of them, this is their first crash. For a lot of them, this is the first time things have really, I mean, things have fallen apart to just an enormous extent. And for this to be your first fall apart is really intense in my, what I'm witnessing with them. And it's not even as simple as saying like, well, you know, be resilient, you know what I mean? Or like, you know, pick yourself up, because for a lot of them, it's been just incredibly disturbing and disorienting for all this, which is normal. I mean, it's been that way for all of us, but I think because we're a little bit older, we've been through certain things like this. We know there will be an end. We know there will be a turnaround eventually.
Yeah. Well, I know it's like, right, to not even really know who you are yet, and to just be setting off to kind of create your identity and have this happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's supposedly hitting teenagers like the worst. Huh?
I think some, yeah, for some, for sure. And it just, well, and in like in every area, it exposes the weaknesses that were already there and makes them even more difficult. I mean, for, you know, for people who were already struggling to pay the bills, like, this is now just the worst. And for children who live in families where things were not going amazing, this, again, the worst. If you're in a family that was, you know, very strong and very functioning and quite privileged, it's not quite as bad in from what I'm seeing. But of course, you know, it's just exacerbating what was already difficult, hard, weak, troubling, whatever. Yeah.
That must be are you kind of also like a, it's almost like you're having to do a little bit of therapy or just talking through things with kids too?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I try to be like just another adult presence in their life for especially ones who are just at home, like with their parents all day. And that's the only adult that they talk to, you know, and, you know, your parents have so many different expectations of you and have this long history with you and all. And I'm just like, hi, I'm a new, fresh adult. And like, you know, I just care about you for you. And I don't need you to get an A, or I don't need you to take out the trash. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Okay. Who are some of your like spiritual teachers? That's what I'm curious about. Or people that influence you.
Yes. People that influence me. I mean, I have been seeing the same spiritual director now for a really long time, like 17 years or something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He's a Dominican nun, and she's taught me a ton. Like that's been like very directly. Like she's like, I literally see her every month. She's my spirit.
So she's like your mentor, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's taught me everything I know about like prayer and also like discernment, like trying to figure out like, am I hearing my own voice rattling around in my head, or like, is God in there somewhere or something?
Mm-hmm.
So for sure that. And then, wow. I mean, most everyone else, like books that I've read, you know, like I just read Untamed by Glennon Doyle.
Oh, I haven't read that.
Girl.
Yes. Okay.
Highly recommend.
Okay.
This is her best book yet to me by far. Love her. And yeah, I'm reading Henry Nouwen right now, who's this priest, this Dutch priest who's long deceased, but he's like a kind of a contemplative, and but just also writes about like spiritual practice in the modern world, and I really like him. So
yeah. So you're always kind of like reading things or exploring things.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
And so I wouldn't call myself, I'm definitely not, I mean, I don't practice religion. And so that was one of my questions too, is like, as a Christian, how do you reconcile other pathways to God? And it's like, to me, you seem like, there's some Christians that I just really love, like Krista Tippert. Do you know her?
And, oh yeah.
And just like these open-minded, I love hearing about Christian perspective in that way. And so I always am excited to kind of hear how you're tackling things. And has that been always something that you've, I mean, yeah, like what's your, that's such a big question, but.
Yeah, it is. But I never really felt threatened by like other paths to God necessarily. The way I reconcile it now is that I feel like I am one person in one, mm-hmm. in one context, you know, like I'm a North American educated mid-40s white woman. Like, mm-hmm. like I can only do one path, like, cause that's just me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and
yeah.
It doesn't mean that I don't recognize the holy in other religious practices. Cause I totally do. And I actually love talking to observant people in other faith traditions, because I feel like we have a ton in common.
So much. Yeah.
Anyone who's really, I feel like, trying to get to know the divine in a sincere way, I'm like, I've got a ton to talk to you about, you know, because we all run into like institutional obstacles. And when your institution disappoints you, and when the leadership is bad, or when the mm-hmm. sexism or the racism comes into it, it happens in every major world religion, I feel like, and every institution, period, religious or otherwise. But so anyway, I feel like just for me, there's so much for me to learn and that speaks to me in the Christian tradition. Again, not to say like to the exclusion of all others, but I also just feel like I can't just pivot and go become a Jew now, because I love so much of Jewish spirituality, but it's just not who I am.
No, it's not your tradition.
Exactly.
And your culture.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I feel the same. Even I actually read when Sophia was a baby, I was reading what was it called? Buddhism for Mothers or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so good for me to read that at that time. And just, and like Pema and teachers from other religious traditions, I resonate with so much. So I feel very comfortable with like at living in a pluralistic world. I'm confident that there are ways for all of us to be able to live together and also find the spiritual practices and traditions that resonate with us personally and us culturally and us familially and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes I'm jealous of my Jewish friends, I gotta say, because they just have so many rich traditions that they actually still practice. Like,
yeah,
you know, and even if you aren't necessarily very religious, if you're Jewish, but you still just do a lot, you know, you have these really cool holidays. And it reminds me of being in India. And I love that, how, I mean, there's a holiday for everything. There's a spiritual day for so many things. And it's not really a question of like, you know, are you religious or are you not? It's part of their tradition and their fabric. And so for me, it's like, I totally identify as like an Irish Catholic, you know, those are my roots, but those traditions didn't carry with me. And I mean, that's sad in a way, because it's like, so I think that's where a lot of people are in America, be like us, I'm saying, like this, you know, white woman, 40s, whatever, just that you come from probably from some sort of religion, you might or you might not, but if you come from a religious tradition, and then where are you when you want to find spiritual meaning and you want to, you know, when you're feeling God and when you're, and even when you're talking to your kids about God, I mean, that's what's interesting too. You know, we don't pray at night.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized that I was like, I kind of want to pray at night with him. And then also that I always say, we sing, he's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole wide world. And we sing, you know, and we do it for everybody we know. And the other night, I think this is probably the same night, we always have these deep conversations, my son and I, he's probably just trying to like stay up longer before bed. But he was saying, he asked me, before God created the universe, what was there? I was like, oh my goodness. And first of all, the fact that he said God was interesting, you know, because we talk about God, but I always say, when I talk about God, I say every culture has a different path to God. And, you know, I actually have more things from India, like little Ganeshas, and I have more Hindu things than anything else that are religious in my house. But so the fact that he said that without me giving him an agenda about who God is, and I always just say, we don't know, you know. Yeah. But I thought that was really cool. And then he goes, can we sing that song? And I'm like, that is a prayer, you know, because that's God.
Totally.
And I love that. It's cool to, I think it's such a cool path when you, it's more complicated to be an aware, thoughtful, conscious person who takes a traditional religious path, you know, what you've done. And that, I just think that's actually really cool, because that is, if I had had more of that, you know, I just had like scary, kind of like freaky things. I just felt like nothing was really resonated in like an open-minded way.
Mm-hmm.
For me when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I just think it's really neat.
Thanks. Well, stay tuned, because I think there are a lot of people in your same shoes who, you know, for whatever reason, what they were exposed to as kids or teens or even young adults just did not resonate for a lot of really good reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course, right, as we get older and we see more of the world and we experience more people's stories, traditional religion can seem more and more like, why would you ever want to do that? Because it can seem so limited and limiting, I think. But I also think there's a way in which there's such good, like, kernels of goodness in there. And it's a, like, to me, it's part of my job to, like, get those kernels out and, like, put a spotlight on them and be like, yeah, forget all the homophobia. Look at this, like, look at this,
yeah,
this wisdom teaching or this, like, piece of knowledge about the universe that's, like, so helpful to really ponder, you know?
And then, yeah, that's what I was thinking about, rituals. Like, what rituals do you have daily related to your religion or not, you know, or I'm just interested in that.
Oh, you're asking me. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny that we were talking about sleep earlier, because it's only now that she's almost seven, my daughter, that I feel like, okay, I can start to play around with my sleep, you know, all that to say that I lately, and the pandemic is a whole other thing, but lately I have found it very helpful to get up really early, like 5 a.m. and, you know, be by myself and journal and pray and sit quietly. And people said that to me for years. And went to me, I'm not saying this to any listener who has a child under 12, because it's just like, I know. You're so exhausted and your sleep is so precious, but that is really serving me these days for sure. And then, I mean, the bigger rituals too of going to see my spiritual director, and we pray actually at dinner. Like, I feel like that's for me what works better for us. And then we sing, which is prayer at bedtime, but I don't really couch it that way. You know, I'm hyper sensitive to trying not to overload her with God talk or theology or stuff when she's so little, because I don't want her to grow up to hate it. So I'm actually,
yeah,
I don't know. She probably will anyways, because I mean, the daughter of a religious studies teacher, like, she's destined to hate it. But I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Anyways. The way you're approaching it, you know, maybe that seems like she wouldn't, she might not. And with Nevin, I mean, it's like, I don't mention it and he'll be like, he's obsessed with baby Jesus, you know. And then, and also, like, the first time we went to a Catholic, he had not been to a Catholic church, it was my brother's wedding, and Jesus was nailed to the cross.
Yeah,
it's real graphic. And he was like, oh my gosh, like, what is that?
Yeah.
And I had to explain that, and that was interesting.
Yep. Yeah, back when we used to go to mass, like before the pandemic, she would always fixate on Jesus on the cross and want to hear that story again and again, and want me to say it again and again. Like, what is that?
Because it's kind of scanned. I mean, yeah, it's almost like rated R. They want to hear it.
No, gruesome. It is. Yeah. So gruesome. And there's something there. There's something there about... And I feel like it's good. I'm like, it's good. You should see that, because the world is gruesome still, you know, and like, we're still, the state is still murdering people, just more quietly and privately. That really inspires me though, to want to write like a book for a boy like Nevin about the baby Jesus, and like that, you know, one that wouldn't be super oppressive or super like, you must believe this or you're going to hell, but just like something really invitational.
Yeah, because I started looking for things. I was like, okay, he wants to hear the story of Jesus, you know. So then I found like a couple movies, but they were just, yeah, it was hard to find the right thing for like people that are, you know, not Christians anymore, or are whatever you are, but just like, how do you present Christianity in an open-minded way? And it is our tradition. I mean, that, you know, that is like an interesting thing to tackle, and I think people do want to talk about it.
Yeah,
you know,
totally,
with their kids.
Yeah, that's super inspiring for me.
And I would love a prayer book too, because, well, I found a prayer book actually. It was Burke's when he was a child, and we have it, and it's just all these little prayers, but it's a lot of like, there are, you know, Our Father, and there's like real traditional ones, but I was like, yeah, just to have a little prayer book, that wasn't, I think I would like to do that at night, even if it was like Native American prayers about the earth.
Oh yeah.
Or, you know, I guess I could just find that. I should do that. But
you don't need one more thing on your to-do list. And yeah,
I know.
Stuff out there. I mean, yeah, I can actually send you some recommendations too.
I love that.
Cool. I'm going to.
Great. That was one of the things I was thinking about last night, was how you meet people in your life at certain times. And it's really weird because you can meet someone when you're 5 or 10 or 15. And I know people change a lot and become different, but you always kind of have the same sort of connections and values and things, even when you haven't created who you are yet. And so I love this kind of that we've showed up in each other's lives every now and then. And I feel like we would be really good friends if we lived closer. We just met each other right now, you know?
I know. I feel the same way. I have so much affection for you in my heart, even though, I mean, we were really only close day-to-day friends for like 2 years when we were in middle school, you know, like.
Yeah. But those are some hardcore friendship, you know?
Yeah, totally. So,
I mean, yeah, it was a big, I think middle school's like, you know, Lord of the Flies. So.
It is. I didn't know that when I was there, but when I look back, I'm like, oof, that was brutal. But
I knew it.
Yeah, I didn't really know it. So
I even knew what table we were. I always say it's like we were at the second to the last table in terms of popularity.
Yeah, we were.
Do you remember that?
Maureen.
But we were actually like a really cool table if you look at the people at our table and what they're doing now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, it's almost better not to be in the first couple echelons of tables.
I wouldn't have it any other way. I mean, I couldn't have had it any other way.
I know.
But
we weren't at the last. We were not at the last table, Molly.
All right. You brought up the table. So before I let you go, I have to bring up lifting the heavy tray.
Oh, I just told Nevin about lifting the heavy tray.
Get out of here.
2 days. I did.
Tell our listeners what it is to lift the heavy tray.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, I almost want to hear what you say about it, but lifting the heavy tray was something that didn't Mrs. Robertson talk about it, our gym teacher or something, or we saw it in a seminar.
Yeah. We had an assembly, girl. We had a motivational speaker come to our middle
school. Yeah, that's right. And they talked about lifting the heavy tray at lunch.
Yeah.
When you see someone that's sitting by themselves. Mm-hmm. That you take your lunch tray, you lift it, and you go sit by them.
Yeah.
And we did do that.
We did. We did bless with our 12-year-old hearts.
With that one boy.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Is that what you remember with it too? It's been a long time.
Yes. We picked up, because there was this boy.
Yeah. Chris, who, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Always sat by himself. And, you know, now though, being married to an introverted person, I'm kind of like, maybe he wanted to sit by himself. But anyway,
like, what are you guys doing?
I know, like, why are all these weird girls coming over here and like trying to lift some heavy tray all over me? But we freaking listened to that assembly and we took it to heart and we were like, you guys, we should lift the heavy tray. And we did. We were second tier. We were second to the last tier girls lifting the heavy tray to go down to the last table.
So I never thought about it, but the fact that we did that is nice.
We did it out of niceness. That's for sure. I'm not sure how it was received, but we definitely did it out of niceness. Thank you so much, Maureen. That was so fun. This was such a treat.
Thanks for listening to On a Mission. Get all of the details about this episode at MaureenDupreeDominguez.com. I put up links to all the books that we mentioned, including my recommendations for books to help you talk to your kids about God that won't scare them. While you're there, make sure you sign up for my weekly email newsletter, which contains prayer tools, cool stuff to read, and links to other progressive, faith-based stuff around the internet. Don't forget to take my reader survey for 2021. I want to hear about how you're liking the podcast and get your recommendations for future guests. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter @_Maulene. Thanks for all your support of the podcast. See you next time.